system. And the fly in the ointment is gonna bring the whole thing down.
Show.com. Sunday, the big day for our Secretary of State as he took a break from his diplomatic duties to go back to his squishy space and receive the Lifetime Achievement Award from the World Petroleum Congress. For all my anti-government friends, these are the people who are really running the world. Just a thought. Anyway, here to talk about the big G20 summit, all of the insanity, and of course, did Junior commit treason? We've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come talk with us. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So, what are your thoughts on Junior?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably treason. It's certainly collusion. It's not surprising. It's in line with everything that this government's been doing, since the campaign, before the campaign. We shouldn't forget that Trump himself confessed to obstruction of justice on national television, and the reason they do this so casually is because they think that they're immune from prosecution.
Yeah, well, they're not politicians, right, sir?
They are definitely politicians. Politicians with a mafioso twist. So, they know how to use the political apparatus that they've inherited, in order to do their own bidding. They're not there to lead the country. They're not there to serve the public. They're there to strip the country down for parts and profit off of it with, collaborators, both in the United States and in Russia. And they've made that abundantly clear. I mean, that's the thing that I find kind of amazing is that they'll tell you, because they're so confident in their ability to pull this off, that they'll do things that are incredibly blatant. Another example, of course, is inserting the children, into this burgeoning, dynasty that they're trying to create, doing things like putting Ivanka front and center at the G20, which seems like the kind of thing a kleptocratic, corrupt government would do, and it is. And they don't care who sees, because they're very confident in their ability to get away with this.
So you're not in favor of Ivanka filling his seat while he went to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible. Like, I wrote articles warning about this months ago, so I kind of expected that something like this would happen. And, children of autocratic leaders are often put into these positions. They serve a number of purposes. They're there to soften the image of the president. In this case, I think Ivanka may have been inserted because Trump is not entirely lucid. He's not able to control himself. I think she's actually more skilled at, interacting in this kind of setting than he is. They're useful vessels for money laundering, for carrying out dirty politics that the person in question, in this case Trump, might want to be one step away from. And the reason that these types of leaders focus on family members and put them in these high-level positions is because they're paranoid. They're very insular. They need a circle of trust, and they tend to not trust people more than their own family. So we should expect to continue to see them in these positions, despite the fact that they're completely unqualified, that they have no interest in the public, and that they've broken laws. Kushner has violated a number of laws. He lied on his security clearance forms. He lied about his meetings, with various Russian officials. In normal cases, he would have been removed from power already. Those are serious offenses. Yet it continues. And so the question is really, who is going to do anything about this? Will Sessions do something about it? Probably not, because he's also implicated in this entire process. He did the same thing about lying about meeting with Russian officials and leaving in office forms. And so that puts us, in a very dangerous position.
Yeah, I mean, I saw an interview with Richard Painter, former ethics lawyer under the W administration. And for someone during the W administration to come out and say that, Junior, Manafort, Kushner, any of them would be, if not ousted, they'd be in custody and in jail.
They should be. I mean, the key difference between the types of crimes that were committed during, George W. Bush's administration, which were substantial, they were essentially war crimes, is that there is not this central issue of which country is this group of people most loyal to. And in the case of Trump and his group, that country is not the U.S. Their loyalty to Russia, and specifically their loyalty to the group of oligarchs that keeps their enterprise running, and that's deeply embroiled in the Russian government. You know, these circles of, you know, espionage and plutocracy and governance in Russia, you know, overlap quite a bit. It's, you know, we have our own issues with that here, but it's, you know, a different kind of structure. That's who are their benefactors. That's who they're serving, and that's who they're willing to literally give the United States to. And Trump this morning on Twitter said that, you know, like I've been saying that for months, that he's giving this country away to Russia, and Trump flat out said he's giving the country away. He did it in this sort of statement where he was also talking about, you know, comparing Chelsea Clinton and Ivanka, but they're not subtle about this. You know, we're losing our sovereignty. We're certainly losing our national security. You can see that in the sheer volume of things that Russia has hacked, you know, the Pentagon, the State Department, nuclear plants, very likely the power grids, and so many U.S. officials, especially John McCain, keep referencing that. And of course, you know, our voter rolls and, you know, possibly other facets of the election, the DNC, personal emails, all sorts of things. So we're in a position where we've not just lost our power, but we have, you know, our safety, our security, and our sovereignty being given away by the executive branch to an adverse, hostile, authoritarian power. So that, unfortunately, is the situation in the United States right now.
No, I mean, you point out inaccurately, you know, the Pentagon, our electric grid, you know, many of our institutions, not to mention the election. And yet you've got a president who suggests that we create a cybersecurity unit with the people who evidently got all the keys to our institutions.
Yeah, I have a feeling that wasn't directly that his idea. I think he
didn't.
Oh,
no, that was not his idea.
You know, realize how it would be, you know, what kind of reaction do we get? Because he is in this circle where, you know, he can't handle any kind of criticism, and he's surrounded by lackeys. He has this bloated sense of self. And so I don't think he necessarily anticipated that he was, you know, giving up the game quite as much as he did there. And, you know, and he does this a lot. But, you know, I think the purpose of this cybersecurity commission, whether or not it will go forward, is to basically make legal all of the things that Russia has already been doing. Instead of Russia hacking our data or our systems, we're just going to hand it over to them. And we're going to do that under the pretext of, oh, we're working on cybersecurity. And so that way, when people raise the point, you know, that we're giving personal data, you know, national security information to a hostile state that has attacked us, you know, at least in a cyber way, they can just excuse it. And I think they're realizing maybe that this won't fly. I think that they essentially are going to keep doing it anyway. They're going to continue to exchange this type of information. Everyone acts as if, you know, Michael Flynn, who is a Russian agent, wasn't, you know, in the executive branch for a number of weeks collecting all sorts of information. And, you know, Trump and his partners are in the executive branch with access to all our information. And I don't think that they have any qualms in giving that information to the Kremlin. I'm sure they already have a lot of it. So this is just a formalization of that.
Yeah, and the question then becomes, you know, how, you know, when this is all said and done, I mean, because there's a lot of people talking about the reality that we're losing our leadership position in the world as the rest of the world is moving on without us. And, well, we seem to be giving away all of our secrets.
Yeah, I mean, I can't blame the rest of the world for moving on without us. You know, there are issues that are global issues, things like climate change that the rest of the world needs to take action on, you know, for there to be a world, you know, that exists. And if we're not going to join in things like that, if we're going to be hostile to science, if we're going to be, you know, very pro-war, if we're going to align with dictators, then, you know, other countries should not be aligning with us. They should be doing what they can to stop this so that we don't have a climate crisis, a refugee crisis. You know, all these things, you know, we already have them, but they're going to get exponentially worse now that the United States has gone in another direction and, you know, is partnering with Russia and China ideologically on these issues. And that has terrible consequences for everyone. So I'm glad that European leaders, you know, are condemning this and stepping up, because we're absolutely doing the wrong thing.
And to be honest, you know, the signals that we're showing is that we have no real positions, that out of each side of his mouth, it seems that there's something different. And you look at Tillerson's statement on Syria and saying that, you know, maybe Russia's got the right idea in what's going on in Syria.
Yeah, I mean, Tillerson is just a prop. Like, Tillerson is somebody who they put in there knowing he has no diplomatic experience, knowing that He'll keep his mouth shut, knowing that he has an Order of Friendship medal from Putin, and his primary interest seems to be to, you know, get sanctions dropped to allow Exxon and other industries, allow his friends, you know, to make the most money possible off of stripping the U.S. of natural resources, you know, and also other parts of the world. And they'll do that, you know, in cooperation with gigantic Russian companies that are linked to the Russian government. I think that that's the nature of this relationship. I don't think that Tillerson has an ideological core. I think he's occasionally, you know, maybe given statements by others in the State Department, you know, to make him sound more diplomatic. But from what I understand, he generally disregards the rest of the State Department. He certainly gutted it, left a lot of positions unfilled, you know, which then therefore leads him to rely on people like Kushner and Bannon and others who have kind of filled in, you know, where all those positions are vacant. You know, that's a problem in its own right.
No, I mean, it's a major problem. But, you know, you look at this and, you know, this I watched the speech from Poland. You saw some of the, you know, messaging on all sides. And you go, what exactly is this government doing?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch that speech. My family fled Poland because the Russians, you know, were trying to kill them, and they did kill the ones that left. This was 100 years ago. And so there's something personal about this, about watching Poland's own government change, watching our government change, and, of course, watching both, you know, kind of collaborating with the worst aspects, you know, of the Russian government. But, you know, that speech, you know, I did read most of it, was Bannon and Miller, this idea of basically white supremacy being marketed in a more, you know, sort of pseudo-intellectual clash of civilizations kind of way. And, you know, it's rhetoric, and they know how to write a much better speech. You know, they give these sort of things to Trump when they want to trick gullible people into thinking that he has some sort of vision beyond just kleptocracy and money, you know, but that vision that he peddles is dangerous. It's part of a broader worldwide movement of white nationalism and white supremacy that, you know, you've seen it change Poland, Hungary, you know, you've seen it try in France, you know, in the Netherlands, and then, of course, here and, you know, also in the UK with Brexit. So that's all part of a theme. And so I think it's important to, you know, kind of look at these international connections and how different white nationalist groups are collaborating in the aim of this broader vision that hurts a lot of vulnerable people.
So is the Pope right to be afraid of the dangerous alliance of the U.S. and Russia?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm very glad that he spoke out. I'm glad that he is acknowledging it is an alliance, because there's been a lot of false information put out, but I think, you know, by very naive reporters in the United States who still kind of have this, you know, Cold War mentality or this idea that the U.S. and Russia are, you know, adversaries, and we should be to some extent. I mean, ideally, we would not be, you know, violent adversaries pursuing war, but, you know, obviously Russia has attacked us, and we should respond in turn, but we're not. You know, the Trump administration is Russia's partner. The Trump administration is essentially doing Russia's bidding, and so you can basically see this as a, you know, a linked entity that's going to do things in tandem to hurt other countries, you know, whether it's Syria, whether it's North Korea. You know, as I've mentioned, I know on your show, Trump has had this fantasy for 30 years of working with Russia and dropping nukes on other countries. And, you know, that seems like something that could plausibly happen under this current international alignment.
Yeah, but you look at what's going on with North Korea, and I keep hearing my Trump supporter friends saying, we should just nuke them all.
Yeah, I don't think people think this all the way through. I mean, first of all, it's a horrible idea, you know, for North Korea, for the North Koreans who suffer, you know, under their dictatorship. And, you know, one thing I hope Americans and others have realized is that a government does not represent its people when that government is authoritarian. You can't punish people, or you should try not to, for what the worst elements of those in power are doing. And so it would be a tragedy if North Korea was nuked, but it would also be, there would be a retaliatory action against South Korea, you know, in which they would be hurt. It would pull in Japan and China. It would hurt the U.S., you know, because we have troops there in that region as well. And, you know, it would ultimately spread all over the world. It would be a point of no return. I mean, there's like no way to really understate what a departure and what a tragedy it would be if the Trump administration were to, you know, unleash some kind of what they deem a preemptive nuclear strike on North Korea, it would change the world in an irreparable way.
And if you thought you had refugee problems in the Middle East, you know, imagine what a couple million people from North Korea fleeing into the South or into China would do.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but again, we have this kind of simplistic thinking that you know, we can fix things immediately. And that's, you know, we have the, you know, I go back to the H.W. Bush war with Iraq. You know, it was 2 weeks, you know, it was, and we all think that that's how things should be done. Quick 2 weeks, we got our objective, now we're out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of thinking lasted up until about the Iraq and the Afghanistan wars, because people at the time thought that those wars would be carried out similarly, that we would go into the country for a few months, we would have, you know, a low number of casualties, and then we would leave, and that would be that. And of course, we're still in Afghanistan, and, you know, Iraq dragged on for a long time and, you know, caused massive, you know, amount of casualties and displacement for people who live in the region, and also, you know, a large number of casualties among our own troops. So I think people now are very wary of war. You know, you heard that from all sides throughout the campaign, especially people of my generation, you know, people in their 30s who were the ones, you know, who went out and fought these wars, you know, in the early 2000s and mid-2000s. And so, you know, I think most people don't want that, which is why they should think things through when, you know, Trump is dropping bombs for no particular strategic purpose on Afghanistan, or flirting with the idea of dropping nukes on North Korea, or, you know, completely out of his depth in Syria. That entire administration is sending a number of different messages, and, you know, none of them are good. You know, there are going to be terrible consequences from this. It's already destabilized, and that's why we needed a competent and informed leader to try to get us out of the morass that we were already in, and instead we have the opposite.
Yeah, maybe 2020 will help us. Who knows? Last question I've got for you. What are you paying attention to this week now that Congress is back? I mean, you know, it's my view, and a friend of mine, Representative Brendan Boyle, said he's going to put forth a piece of legislation that says that we're not working with the Russians. I'm curious what you're looking for in this week.
Yeah, I mean, people should try to push that. I mean, one thing I think the Trump administration is going to do, and you know, I was kind of expecting this after the meeting with Putin, is drop the sanctions. And as we know, the sanctions are being held up in the House. And so, you know, this is sort of similar to the statements going on Syria, where there are a variety of people in the government and in the administration putting out a lot of contradictory messages. I think in this case, you know, look to the executive branch, because they have no problem abusing their power, you know, overriding what people want, whether they're on the, you know, judiciary and the legislature. They will try to get done what they need to get done on behalf of their Russian benefactors. And I think it's very good that people are putting bills forward and, you know, just acknowledging that this is happening, you know, that the Trump administration is selling out our country to Russia. But they need to be aggressive. You know, I think they need to be forthright. I think this needs to be explained clearly to the American people. You know, I wish before Obama had left office, you know, he had been forthright in what was going on, because it led to a lot of skepticism, you know, because it is unprecedented. And I think if you don't have a good understanding of, you know, Russia's history, of our engagement for the last, you know, 25 years or so of Putin, it can be hard to process. And so I hope people do continue to speak out and to fight for our country, for our security and our sovereignty. And, you know, remember that public officials are supposed to serve the people. And that's not what this administration is doing.
It's going to be an interesting week ahead. Sarah, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Great talking with you again.
You too. Thanks.
Always good talking to you. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.